The clocks have sprung forward, and so has Congress. This week, with the House back in session, a lot is going on that could affect federal agencies. For a roundup, we check with Bloomberg government. For a roundup, we check in with Bloomberg government reporter Eric Wasson. Eric, good to have you back.
Thanks so much for having me, Tom.
So I guess the first thing on the agenda of interest, I guess, to everybody would be a House plan to vote on cuts to mandatory spending. Tell us what's going on there.
Well, this is part of Speaker Paul Ryan and House Budget Chairman Tom Price's attempt to get about 36 rebellious conservatives on board with their budget plan. They want to pass a budget at the $1.07 trillion top-line spending level for agencies that was agreed upon with the White House in November. But these conservatives who voted against that original deal do not want to be seen voting for a budget and are trying to extract some sort of price. So currently, the offer on the table is to have the authorizing committees, like Energy and Commerce today and Ways and Means probably on Wednesday, start to move bills that come up with $30 billion in mandatory entitlement savings over 2 years. So today we're going to have opening statements at Energy and Commerce on their bills, which involve cuts to Medicaid. And the Ways and Means Committee is looking at some tax changes, for example, having people supply Social Security numbers when they get child tax credits in order to come up with savings. House Republicans could be marking up a budget this week if they come together on an agreement. But at this time, it's unclear whether that budget can in fact pass. And that would be quite a symbolic blow to Speaker Paul Ryan, who made his name as the House Budget Committee chairman and unifying his conference around budget blueprints for several years.
So before we get to the budget blueprint, I want to just return for a moment to the mandatory spending cuts. These are not really fundamental programmatic changes, but more like trimming to get short-term savings. Is anyone thinking about the long-term? The GAO just came out with a report saying there's something north of $40 trillion they can't pay for actuarially in all these programs, but nothing to deal with that at this point, correct?
That's right. The grand bargain is really off the table in the election year. I think we can see some possibility of it being revived with a new president and perhaps different Senate next year. But yeah, these are basically trims. For example, Energy and Commerce is looking at, and Ways and Means are looking at, you know, eliminating eligibility for Medicaid for lottery winners. You'd think that most lottery winners wouldn't be then filing for Medicaid, but apparently some are, and the CBO says you can get some savings from doing that. You know, there's also one about reimbursement rates for the state Children's Health Insurance Program, SCHIP. So these are basically trims, and I think that that's kind of on purpose because Republicans want to be able to go to the conservatives and say, hey, these are things that's going to be hard for at least some centrist Democrats to vote against, and something that, if you got to President Obama's desk, would be hard for him to veto. So they're not going for things that they know Democrats would all en masse reject, such as massive cuts to food stamps, so much as looking at things that might be politically difficult for them to oppose, such as Medicaid for lottery winners. But, you know, they're offering conservatives $30 billion in savings over 2 years, and these two committees don't come up to that level. They have just over half the amount of savings. So there are going to be other committees working on some possible savings plans. Kathy McMorris Rogers, the conference chairwoman, is introducing a bill to sunset all unauthorized appropriations. There's about $300 billion in annual spending that's no longer authorized. The underlying statutes have expired, and she wants to try to force Congress to reevaluate those appropriations that are essentially on autopilot. We're seeing this effort in the House, but meanwhile, the Senate has decided to go forward with an appropriations process at the November deal level. Mitch McConnell made that announcement last week, and we're expecting markups and bills to be moving in late April in the Senate. So a lot of this seems to be more about politics and optics than actually the bottom line for federal agencies.
This bill that Tom Price is going to talk about in the House, that is the appropriations from the House side, how far is he from, say, where Ryan might have been had Ryan still been the chairman of that committee?
This is the budget resolution, which doesn't get signed by the president, but does guide the appropriations process. It is very similar to the Tom Price budget of last year, which did pass the House, with the exception, which was also very similar to the budgets that Paul Ryan put together. They have a balance within the 10-year budget window, cutting, this one is going to cut $6 trillion in spending, supposedly, instead of just over five. So these are massive changes to the budget picture with the idea of getting to balance within 9 or 10 years. But again, a lot of these changes typically are forecast to be in the out years, and that's the frustration that conservatives feel. They want to see spending cut in the first year, which is the one where the budget really has teeth. So in that sense, the price budget of the previous year, cut spending, was in line with the budget spending caps of 2011, and this one is in line with the revised spending caps of 2015, which the conservatives oppose. The other issue for Price is also appealing to his defense hawks. Defense hawks want to see an increase of around $18 billion in the defense budget, and Tom Price is opposed to that, thinks that there can be savings. But it looks like some compromise could be found where the budget doesn't endorse such an increase, but doesn't set up procedural roadblocks to having an increase later. In other words, there wouldn't be a point of order on the House floor to block the increase in defense spending, and that may be enough to get people who are on the House Armed Services Committee to vote for this and get it over the top.
We're speaking with Bloomberg government reporter Eric Wasson. So it sounds like maybe if all the pieces align, there could be some return to regularity, or at least the assurance that there might be some kind of a budget before the expiration of the fiscal year.
Well, I think that, doing all 12 bills, I still think is going to be a very tall order. The House and Senate have very few legislative days this year. They're going to break for the party conventions in the middle of July, come back after Labor Day, when usually there's just a few weeks to quickly get a stopgap spending bill done. So, if you're going to start moving bills in the Senate, on the Senate floor in May, that gives you, 2.5 months to get 12 bills done. I think that even assuming that you don't have certain members putting filibuster holds on bills, that would be a very aggressive timetable. But I do think that they will try to move at least some of the bills. I especially think the Interior and Environment bill is very attractive to Majority Leader Mitch McConnell, because he will try to get some language on there blocking the EPA from certain actions. They've already talked about not loading up the bills with what so-called poison pill riders, because that could cause Democrats to return to their stance of last year of blocking all Senate floor votes on appropriate bills. But I think they're going to try to get some policies enacted, which is the reason they say that they want to do the 12 bills.
And also on the agenda for this week is the FAA extension, because that's been a problem in the past where FAA has been allowed to elapse. And so it looks like perhaps the six-year bill could actually happen?
Well, right now we're going to have an extension through the middle of the summer. That's pretty much guaranteed to go through before the expiration of FAA authority at the end of this month. The Senate and the House have very different longer-term bills. The Senate is set to start marking up an 18-month-long authorization for FAA that does contain some interesting changes to policy, especially about drones. I think the lawmakers are very concerned that there isn't really a standard set of policies to deal with drones, to establish FAA authority over drones, and the worry that they're going to start causing collisions and other mayhem in the skies. And there's also some other interesting parts of the Senate bill, such as restrictions on transport of bulk lithium batteries, which will be of interest especially to corporations like Apple. But it's not the same sweeping changes we saw in the House bill. That's a six-year bill that would privatize, it would essentially shave off air traffic control from FAA and create into a separate corporation. And that has gotten a lot of pushback from both sides of the aisle, especially from among appropriators, who are rarely loath to see their control over air traffic control diminish. So that bill essentially is on ice. There has been some reporting also about the chairman in the House and his relationship with airline lobbyists and so forth. So that has also caused some problems for the bill in the House.
So it strikes me there's really no big overarching issues facing the nation, or so you would judge from what's going on in Congress. This is all blocking and tackling getting past the elections.
Yes, and I think the other big thing that we're seeing this week is the nomination of a Supreme Court justice and the ability of the Senate to sort of ignore that. The White House is ramping up a massive effort to put pressure on members, especially Chuck Grassley, the Judiciary Committee chairman, to hold hearings and to hold a vote on a nominee. So this will be the other big drama of the week, and I think it's also highlighting just sort of the stalemate that now really has settled in between the White House and Congress.
Eric Wasson covers The Hill for Bloomberg Government. Thanks so much for joining me with that look ahead.
Thanks so much, Tom.
Share this interview with colleagues. Go to federalnewsradio.com/federaldrive and click share with friends.